Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Partner Running Show, a show for runners and soon-to-be runners from around the world as we talk all things running. The Partner Running Show is hosted by Couple on the Run, Sue and Andrew O'Brien, and proudly brought to you by PartnerRunning.com and the Partner Runner magazine. And now, on with the show. Welcome to the Partner Running Show on this 23rd or 22nd of June, 2015. I'm Andrew O'Brien. I'm here in the Partner Running studio with my wonderful co-host, Sue. How are you going, Sue?
I'm going very well after a great running weekend.
Great running weekend, but a very sad week.
Yes, it was a very sad week this week for, well, on the personal level, I suppose, for my family, the Clark family, but also for many runners, both within Australia and around the world, in fact, and not only runners, but anyone that came in contact with and had associations with Ron Clark.
Yeah, so after a relatively short illness, but a longer period of heart issues, Ron passed away just on a week ago, sort of thing, and so. Very sad, but I suppose from the family's perspective, it seems to be I'm not sure what the word is, appreciation, I'm going to say, but it's not quite, doesn't quite describe it. Just the sort of the tributes and the recognition of what a contribution he made, and I think from my 2 cents worth, it's the recognition not just of his running achievements, which are clearly outstanding, 17 or 19 world records, depending on how you phrase it, but the contribution he then made lifelong to fitness industry, gyms, training, running, athletics, sport, just diet, general fitness, and through his books, his speaking, his gyms, so many activities, too many to mention, but then, and also then his contribution to business and to community life, most notably serving as the mayor of the Gold Coast.
Yes, so just a remarkable career, and again, sort of, I suppose it's a reminder to us that whilst running is such a paramount part of our existence, sometimes when we do get tied up as being a professional athlete, that we've got so much more that we can do for the community other than just focus on our own individual performances. So that's one thing I feel that Ron was able to do with trying to spread, as you said, the message of fitness and well-being, but then also giving back to the broader community.
So as a memorial service being held at the MCG in Melbourne on July 14th.
Mm-hmm.
And so between now and then, we're doing some editing of an interview we did with Ron, and I think we've got some other speech he gave when he launched Couple on the Run.
Yes.
Again, just seems like yesterday that we were there launching the Couple on the Run book with Tony Charlton as our MC and Ron, and now we've lost them both, so... there's only 2 other people on the stage that night.
Yes. So it's a reminder to all of us to make the most of every minute of every day that we have.
Okay, so as they say, and I no doubt Ron would say, the show must go on,
mm-hmm.
and so it will. Today, our feature topic is why run a marathon? And we're going to look at this from 3 perspectives. Why run a marathon, as in a single marathon? Why run your first marathon? Then they're going to sort of spin that into, well, why run a few marathons? Not just one, but a few. And I'm probably talking sort of the 5 to 10 or the occasional. And then last but not least, the third piece of the puzzle, why adopt a sort of marathoning lifestyle for those people who might do 3 a year, year in, year out, or they might do 10 or more a year, but they do it year in. It's kind of like they're always training for always have their next marathon coming along. So it's going to be our feature topic. We've got, of course, our regular segments, Over the Shoulder, Ask Sue. We could have kind of got like almost two Ask Sues today. And one is the formal Ask Sue, and then we're going to go into a question from a listener straight after Ask Sue. So it'll be like Ask Sue Part 2. And then, of course, we'll finish the show with Over the Shoulder. So on that note, sorry, we won't finish the show with Over the Shoulder. We'll finish the show with The Road Ahead. We'll go to Over the Shoulder right now.
Over the Shoulder, a quick review of last weekend's running.
So we sort of jumped in there. Of course, the big dominating news for the running world was the passing of Ron Clark at MBE OAM. But there were other running activities.
Yes. One of them, we were actually at the Traralgon Marathon on the weekend, and throughout Australia with park runs and or park rons, as they called them, and down at the Traralgon Marathon as well, quite a lot of runners wearing black armbands in memory of Ron. Perfect day for running down at the Traralgon Marathon, and Dion Finocchiaro was the winner again, I would say, potentially, and Cathy McMillan also the winner again of the women's marathon section. But many runners out there enjoying a very chilly but brilliant winter's morning down at Traralgon. Other little news items around the world, and just a few little interesting things. The Shrewsbury Half Marathon is under investigation because many runners in today's day and age run with GPS watches are becoming more aware of distance and time. And following this event, many, many runners complained to the organisers that the distance was half a mile short. And because of that fact, and that many of them were recording PBs, there was actually a formal inquiry put to the race director that this event was short. Now, what's happened with this is that now they're going to investigate it, because the race director had paid for certification that this and had received a documentation saying that it was the correct half marathon distance. So they're going to investigate that.
Which race was this?
The Shrewsbury Half Marathon in the UK.
You'd be tickled off if you were the race director and you'd gone and paid the money to get it done properly. So fingers clearly not pointing there.
Yes, so it does raise the question of now pointing the finger back at the certifiers to just find out, well, what actually happened with that.
Assuming that the course that was marked out and the runners ran was the course that the certifier had certified.
Yes.
It could still be back on the race director, who might have mismarked the course, or one of his volunteers put a cone
in the wrong spot.
And they took a turn a block too early or something. So.
But often, I mean, we all, GPS watch runners do follow the course, and we sort of go, oh, gee, that was a little bit long, or this was a little bit short, but consistently over half a mile, that's a fair distance. Now, another event that caused a little bit of interest, I suppose, reading about this story, how close is close enough to call a dead heat between two runners? So in the Johnny Miles Marathon in the US, two runners cross the line seemingly together, but their chip data, and we are all sort of computerised, showed that there was 0.03 of a second separating these two. Now, how close is too close to call? Their times were different, but it was mutually decided between the runners and the race directors to call dual winners. So two runners recorded as the winner. Winners of this event, but there was a time difference.
So the interesting thing is, when you're having chip time as opposed to gun time, just because you crossed the line at exactly the same point, you might not have started at exactly the same point.
Correct.
So, but as you say, 0.3 of a second.
Yeah, 0.03 of a second. So very, very close, particularly for marathon. So they did. Everyone and the runners themselves were happy to call it a dead heat. But if it had been the Olympics, or it had been a world championship, or, money event.
In the Olympics, they would be very clear about the decimal point that it would go to.
Yes. That's true. Potentially,
that the rules would say that the we're down to point XXX. So
if we were in a marathon major and the title was worth hundreds of thousands of dollars, what would be the story then for splitting it? So just an interesting one of how close this is close enough. Also another little news item. In Europe at the moment, temperatures are soaring. And on this forthcoming weekend is an event called the Penny Marathon. There's also an event in Sydney being held simultaneously on the weekend called the Penny Marathon as well. And this is to raise money for abandoned dogs and cruelty to dogs in particular, coming about through two Greek Australians that felt the pain of a lot of stray dogs that had been basically abandoned in Athens in particular. And anybody that's travelled to that city will see lots of dogs wandering around, seemingly without owners, just trying to make an existence. So these two women got together and with the help of some other runners, put on a marathon in 2012 to try and raise money for stray dogs to take care of them. It's grown. The event really captured the imagination of a lot of people. And now there are, four penny marathons going on in different cities in Greece and the one in Sydney on this weekend. In summer in Greece. And so they've decided they're going to finish at the beach because that's going to be the place where most people are and will attract the most news and attention. But I'm not sure about the Sydney one, it is finishing down at the beach in Sydney as well, even though it's winter. So we'll see what goes on with that one. Other big events around the world over this weekend: Grandma's Marathon, the big one in the US, and Kenyans had that all to themselves with first and second place. Vancouver, also a very popular marathon. 43-year-old expat Brit winner of that event, Andrew Hillier, and Moss Darby from Kenya also. And then in Alaska, the Midnight Mares Marathon attracted 4,000 people under great running conditions. Not so great running conditions, the Leadville Trail Marathon was held on the weekend in Colorado. And whilst temperatures had been just touching the 90s in Denver, higher up at the altitude where the race was being held, very abnormal snow still hanging around, and race directors and organisers were still shoveling snow on Saturday trying to clear the pass for the runners. And they even had to get an avalanche expert in to just check that the road was safe for runners to participate. And it was, but a lot more work than they normally would have had to do. So we might have been complaining about chilly temperatures or thinking it was pretty chilly down in Traralgon. They didn't have to shovel snow for us to run past. So that's some of the news over the last weekend.
I also noted that in Sydney, was the Pat Farmer Sand Marathon.
Oh, that's
right,
yes.
1 kilometre loops on, I think it was Maroubra Beach. And from all reports, tough, but a lot of fun and very enjoyable event done for a good cause. So,
that would be hard going.
Yes.
Have to ask Rick or one of the
Rick
other guys
and,
we see.
Ashley,
yeah.
Ashley, Jane Trump, there's quite a few of the people that we know went up and participated or went and participated in that. So that looked like a lot of fun. Also, interestingly, slightly related, is there's a new race on the Victorian running calendar coming up the last weekend of August. It's called the Wonderland, and it's in the Grampians, and you can still enter there at, I think it's wonderlandrun.com.au. Government's just announced that they've got a grant to add some new trails, join some existing trails together, and they're going to end up with 144 kilometres of a walking trail to highlight the Grampians.
Wow.
With a little bit of loop, you have a 100-mile race waiting to happen. So,
okay.
There you go. Always looking at it from a bit of
See that number 144 and think it's pretty close to 161?
Yeah, not a bad race anyway. But or it could be a relay, 12 lots of people doing 12 kilometres. I remember my 12 times timetable from back in the old school days. There you go. I never knew I still knew that stuff. Okay, on with the show.
Ask Sue. Do you have a question you'd like answered? Why not send us a message, a tweet, or post your question on the Partner Running Facebook page? Take it away, Sue.
Well, this week's Ask Sue is a little bit different, a little bit unusual to the usual Ask Sue segment, in which a listener has potentially asked me a question, or one of my clients has asked me a question to do with running. This time I was asked by the editor of Runner's World to write a tribute to my uncle, and pretty much given free rein to express any thoughts I had or any memories that I had that she thought the listener, the readers might be interested to hear, but also to capture some of the emotion and some of the memories that I had of my uncle. So today's Ask Sue, I'm basically going to read that tribute to Ron that I penned for Runner's World. Jack and I used to run everywhere, Ron told me at lunch a few months ago. We would run to and from school and sports practice. We would run if we needed to do errands, and we would run to the footy to watch Essendon play. Jack said we could pocket the travel money and running would be good for our fitness. It didn't matter if it was 5K, 10K or 20K, raining or not, we still ran. And I have this vision of the Clark brothers running through the streets of Essendon and Moonee Ponds and wonder what the locals and shopkeepers made of them. Could they realise the future in store for the boys? In the years that followed, my father Jack's path led to Aussie rules, captaining and coaching Essendon, playing 263 games and being named All-Australian three times. Ron went on to break 17 official world records, maybe 19, over a variety of different distances, and to represent Australia in Olympic and Commonwealth Games. They always retained the love of running. I'm going to catch up for a run with Ron, my dad would say after a brief phone call. Sometimes around the Tan, maybe up in the hills around Fernie Creek, or in the early days, even around Caulfield Racecourse, although both of them were highly allergic to bees and had to be careful there. Running was a social occasion as well as training. The camaraderie of the trail or the track was important to all of Ron's running circle, although it was left behind during events. We wanted to bury each other, he explained. The greatest accolade I could receive being described as Jack Clark's brother, Ron said at my father's funeral in 2001. And I could also say that it was with a huge degree of pride that I love being introduced as Ron Clark's niece. Running has been a huge part of my life, the joy and freedom it brings, the challenge it presents, and the great friendships that develop through it. Running is something that my brother Ian and my cousins Marcus and Nick have always done. Clark's Run. When my husband Andrew and I wrote our book, Couple on the Run, we were thrilled when Ron wrote the foreword and came down to Melbourne for the launch. He told me on numerous occasions that he thought we were crazy running so many marathons and ultras, but still loved to follow our progress and find out what and where we were running. I will miss our conversations so much, particularly stories from the past and the challenges athletes in the past faced trying to improve their performances. Why would I train and race the same as everyone else, Ron used to say. I'm trying to be better than them, not the same. A mentor, an inspiration to so many, and a motivator to all of us to be fitter and lead healthier lives. Very few have the discipline, are willing to make the sacrifices, or possess the ability and intelligence to succeed at that level. Ron Clark did. He was an amazing man who achieved an incredible amount of success both on and off the athletic track, but also a loving family man who always made time for me and my endless questions. My cousin Nick and I often meet up at various running marathons around Australia. Gold Coast and Melbourne will be the first ones without Ron. No afternoon teas and stories to share. An empty seat at the table. Promoting the concept of people running together is what we call partner running. Ron always encouraged the development of this idea, and it prompted fond memories of his running with Jack as the original partner runners, and formed the foundation of his passion for the sport. I am so proud to be Ron Clark's niece.
That was the Ask Sue segment of the Partner Running Show. If you have a question for Sue, please post it on the Partner Running Facebook page or email us at radio@partnerrunning.com.
And I believe you can check out that plus the rest of the story and the tribute in the next edition of Australian Runners World. And it wouldn't surprise me if they pick it up and run it internationally in the rest of the Runners World network. I picked up something that I was going to talk about earlier in the show. Was a thing that zoomed past. Was I saw this? It was a Facebook one actually. A thing that said people with weekend schedules different from their weekday schedules triple their chances of being overweight.
Oh,
I've always thought that was interesting because I've in two different lives have lived both of those versions. So most of my life I've sort of got up 5 or 6 in the morning, 7 days a week, haven't treated weekends any differently. But through my 20s was very much a sleeping on the weekends to compensate for the late nights and early mornings during the week. And it might get you to explore this research a bit further for next week's show, because they talk about a concept called social jet lag and suggest that this sleeping on the weekend to compensate for the week is a contributing factor to upsetting your metabolic status, which then leads to the whole obesity kind of thing. So it could be an interesting topic for you to explore as our resident researcher and science dude.
Oh, I've got another interesting topic on the back burner as well. So,
good,
a couple of little processes there underway.
I like to keep you busy. Now, as we mentioned earlier, we were sort of going to have Ask Sue and then Ask Sue Mark 2. And Ask Sue Mark 2 comes in the form of a question that we were sent a couple of days ago. And again, I didn't check with the person that I could use their name, but they know who they are, and we thank them very much. And it doesn't. It's a great question that applies to lots of people, so we don't. It doesn't diminish by not naming the person. But let's just say they are a regular listener and have sent us lots of questions from time or many questions, and we really appreciate their contribution and support for the show. But here it goes, and then we'll go and talk about it. So, what the question is, what is the likely cause of heavy legs towards the end of the marathon? Last Sunday, mine began to feel heavy at about the 33-kilometre mark, and I struggled to maintain my intended 5:10 pace from then on. I didn't overtrain in the lead-up to it. In fact, there were two runs that I had to cut short. Is it likely that cutting a couple of long runs short was the cause? In the other marathons, I've run an average 20 seconds slower pace, and my legs haven't got heavy until 37 to 38 kilometres. So there's a couple of things there. First of all, it does make the point that heavy legs is something that is had in different marathons at different points, depending on his pace. So the real important issue, I think, that we're looking at in this question is the heavy legs kicking in during the marathon.
Yep. And what is heavy legs, too, I suppose?
There's a slightly extra factor here for this question in terms of noticing the difference between when he went a bit quicker and it came in a bit quicker. But the broad concept here we're trying to address in answering this question is about why heavy legs and what's the implication for that. So that's point one. Point two, with all of these questions, then there is some key things to look at, but then there could be other things. So, you know, things like what you ate during the race, the hydration you took on, the taper you had in the days before, the work of week you'd had, how you slept, did you have a little bit of a virus coming on, was it extra windy? All of these other factors can contribute to heavy legs kicking in and kicking in earlier. But for the purposes of addressing this question, we're going to make the assumption that all of those factors were dealt with appropriately and weren't the contributing factor. So all things being equal, this notion of the heavy legs is something that happens to marathoners, and the key, the big answer, is in around the training and the race strategy. So we're not dismissing the fact that you know, if you'd been working on your feet for a couple of days before, that would have contributed to the fatigue, which would have brought heavy legs in earlier. But we are saying, for the purpose of this, we're assuming that that's not the case.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So with that said, first of all, Sue,
what are heavy legs?
What are heavy legs? What's it come about? What's the technical
explanation for heavy legs? I believe in this case is the build-up of lactic acid in the muscles. So we've got the situation that lactic acid is built up in the muscles to the point that our bodies can't dissipate that and we feel uncomfortable. There's a change. So we're not dispersing that lactic acid quickly enough and it's building up that we feel that we've lost the freedom of our legs.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So my understanding then is that that happens basically when we are going into new territory. We're either going faster or further than what we're trained for, what we're fit for.
Yep, I think that's probably fair. Yeah, I think that I would agree with that.
So with a lot of marathon training programs, people do their long run off somewhere between 30 and 35K. And in essence, the heavy legs then can kick in around that point. So once you run further than you've been trained to run, your body's not trained and able to get rid of the lactic acid the way it's built up to do so, and the heavy legs kicks in.
Mm-hmm.
Simple explanation. So heavy legs comes about when you're going further or faster, and in the marathon it's often more about the faster and further combined than you have before.
Yes, I would agree with that. Then to my way of thinking that, yep.
Because again, a lot of marathon training programs, they have speed workouts and they have long runs. So on your long run, you're building up your endurance, you're going further, but you're not running, often you're not running at race pace. And when you are running at race pace or faster, you're doing that for 5 or 10K or you're doing repeats, whatever it is, so you're having breaks. So for the vast majority of people, marathon day is the first day that we actually put the distance, going further and going faster, together in the one
mm-hmm.
workout. Okay. So that is part of the cause. Now, word of caution here, because you could easily say, oh, well, solve the problem, just going to go further in my training runs, run my long runs at race pace. What's the problem? You know, I'll get rid of that. The problem with that is, for most of us mere mortals, we don't have the time, the resources, the support, all of the things that go with making that possible, and we get injured, and we end up not running at all. So this is for people who aren't elite athletes or training as elite athletes, there's not a simple quick fix of I'm just going to go out and train like an Olympian, because you know, don't have the time, don't have the resources, don't have the recovery facilities, and we're going to get hurt. Good chance of getting hurt. Okay. So that's, I suppose, is the word of caution. So we've identified three ways in which you overcome the heavy legs. First of all is the status quo. That is, in the case of our person asked the question, they're a year, 18 months into their marathoning career, done three or four, and slowly building up. This occurred, this one, when they ran a 16-minute PB and a low 3:40s time, 3 hours 42, something like it was. So noticeable improvement through the training that he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
So option one, keep on doing what you're doing. Run your maybe 3 to 5 marathons a year, doing the training you're doing, being careful not to get injured, and you could expect to push that heavy legs back further as long as you're running at the same pace. If you try to up the pace, then you're going to bring it forward, and you'll just get faster time, less heavy legs.
Yep. Yes, I can see that makes really good sense. And, you know, unless you are trying to, I don't know, set yourself up as an elite runner, then that's something that's going to be able to fit in with your lifestyle, because clearly it has.
Yep. So you could, I think, expect 5 to 10 minutes improvement over the next year to two by doing nothing other than doing what you're doing, mm-hmm. being careful, not overtraining, not potentially increasing your risk of getting injured, and being strategic about your race approach, your race strategy. So working on that, you know, did you get the drink breaks right? Did you put in any little walk breaks at the drink spots? Did you run too fast up the hills? What are those little things you could improve in your strategy which would get you some improvement? And of course selection.
Yes.
Flattish courses, not too windy, not too hot.
Not too many turns.
All that sort of stuff.
Yep.
So you can get some good improvement.
Mm-hmm.
Option two is, and the last two, or the other two we're going to talk about, is the elite runner and the weekend warrior, where you're changing your training. So for an elite runner or elite training to get rid of the heavy legs, how do they deal with that?
Well, one of the key aspects for elite runners is trying to push the over distance. And we've spoken to a few sub-3-hour marathoners that have been prescribed in their training running over marathon distance to try and bring down their overall times with success. I'll say a couple of people that we've spoken to that have taken that on board have brought down their marathon times at an elite level, but we're talking minuscule increments of maybe getting a minute, 90 seconds improvement by trying to go that over distance.
Yes, now the big thing for the over distance elite runner is that if you're a sub-3 marathoner, and particularly if you're a 2.5 less, then it sounds easy to say, well, I've run over distance. Because for those guys, if they were going to run for 3.5 hours, they're going to run more than 42K and even at a long run pace.
Mm.
But if you're a 3.45, 4.5 hour marathoner, for you to go out and make your long run over distance, then you're out running for maybe five and a half hours
yeah.
in your long run. And that you can't do that because that increases, one, your risk of injury, two, it takes a lot of time, but the trap that people get into when they do that is the fatigue is such that it brings them undone and leads to illness and injury and all that sort of thing. So the thing that the elite runners do, because they are so quick, they can run over distance because the time on their feet isn't such that it dramatically increases their risk of injury or fatigue. But for your average weekend person, you're 3:45 and above, it's just too long. And I remember when I first started running marathons, one of the coaches I spoke to, it's the single biggest mistake people make, is that your slower runners spend too much time on their long runs. You know, really, you shouldn't be going more than 2.5 to 3 hours. Beyond that, you're increasing the fatigue and actually undermining your performance. So, assuming then, and being specific, this person here with a 340-ish marathon, the idea of going out and doing lots and lots of long runs at the 45 to 50K, increased fatigue, increased risk of injury, and also runs the risk of, because you're going so long, slowing you down. So you might pick up some endurance but lose speed.
Yep.
Okay. So then for your weekend warrior, for want of a better term, looking to increase or change their training so as to reduce heavy legs, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think that their bodies will adapt, and perhaps if you are a weekend warrior that's a fairly new runner, the long runs do form an integral part of your training to try and help you get rid of that lactic acid buildup and have it come later in your event. So as to our example of it originally coming at the 37 to 38 kilometre mark, you're going to make it through the marathon if you can get through. You're going to finish. You might start to slow down a lot towards the end, but you're going to make it. So I think the long runs are really important to keep adding or have those as part of your training. Be wary of the speed, but be conscious of the fact that running some shorter distance events and working on even kilometre repeats, running a 5K, that sort of thing, is going to help with your heavy leg build-up. But the long runs are important for weekend warriors. They've got to keep doing them to try and train their bodies to run marathon distance.
So I think within that notion of the weekend warrior, it's the incremental improvement of your training.
Not huge increases over your training period, just those gradual, no more than 10% more per week with your running distances that you're covering. It's not going to happen quickly. It's not a quick fix.
Okay, so maybe some 10K and half marathon racing?
Yeah, that's what I was sort of saying. You put in some speed, but be judicious with that. Don't go overboard with running 100-metre repeats, 200-metre repeats. Maybe the 5K run, the 10K run, even a half marathon, as you say, like trying to go quicker over that distance and then try and come back into the marathon.
And then I think you'd be looking at your 3 to 5 marathons a year.
Yes, again.
To hold within that pace, get the body used to going the distance. And, you know, of your 3 to 5, you might have 2 where you have a real crack at a PB type thing.
Can't do it every week if you're running frequently.
And I think for a lot of us too, we don't have access to 5 fast marathon courses.
Yeah, that's true. Mm.
Let alone 5 times in the 1 year when the conditions are conducive to going fast on those courses. So, you know, our last weekend run, we've run the race 5 or 6 times. This is the first time we haven't had wind. So this is the first time out of those 5 or 6 where you could say the conditions were ideal for a perfect thing. So I suppose the other little tip here is if you are looking with those quick ones, to try, if you can, in the perfect world, find 2 that are close together. And if day one it turns out to be horrific conditions, then either don't run or go slower and save yourself for the one, next one, which is somewhere between 3 to 5 or 6 weeks later. You can sort of do the old, not today, but in 3 weeks' time kind of thing.
So
that's a few thoughts on pushing back the heavy legs. But again, whenever you're going to go quicker or further, you're likely to bring them back in. And it is that notion of you've just pushed beyond where you're ideally trained for.
You're breaking new ground in a way.
Wonderful question, and one that applies to people whether you're running 240, 340, 440, 540. It's something that all marathoners address at various times.
They do.
Okay, on with the show. Now, where's my little control panel? Here we go. You're listening to the Partner Running Show with your hosts, Couple on the Run, Sue and Andrew O'Brien. Proudly brought to you by PartnerRunning.com and the Partner Runner magazine. So, feature topic today is why run a marathon? A popular question, and I suppose in the same way as there are runners of very different sizes, shapes, speeds, there's also lots of different reasons to run a marathon. People are motivated from different perspectives or different ideas as to why they might run a marathon. So why did you first run a marathon? You ran your first marathon as a 17-year-old?
Yes.
18-year-old? Why did you
yes.
run it?
The challenge to see if I could do it. To see if I, you know, I was fast, sort of fast 10K runner. And everyone had always been was telling me that I looked as though I should be able to run a marathon, which is a hard pressure to take, and with a family of endurance runners. So I took the challenge on to see if I actually could.
I find it quite bizarre that someone would say to a 17-year-old, you know, you look like you're a fast marathoner.
Mm.
I mean, just in this day and age, it just doesn't occur to me.
No.
That's something I would say to a 17-year-old. I might say to a 17-year-old, geez, you know, you look like you could be a good 5 or a 10K runner, or you look like you could be a good runner. And if I got into a conversation with them, I might think, and in years to come, maybe the marathon's for you. But I wouldn't have thought I'd be pushing someone at 17 or suggesting to someone at 17 that they were going to be a marathon. But anyway, I think you've probably identified what, for many people, is the starting point for the marathon. It's, can I do it?
Mm.
Or I can do it, and I want to find out what it's like to do it. Depending
true.
On your view of the world, some people think they can do everything, and they want the experience. Other people go, well, that's a challenge. I'm maybe a little bit different perspective, but I'm going to have a crack and see if I can.
Mm. And for a lot of people, it becomes their bucket list.
Yeah,
going to do a marathon.
Again, that's a different one.
Mm.
Again, that's probably not one of our traditional, when we talk about reasons for running in general, the bucket list isn't one that pops up. But when it comes to the marathon, it probably is an aspect of it. So for some people, it's one, can I just do it challenge?
Yep.
Next one might be just this notion of going further.
Yeah. I'll see if I can. I'm a 5K runner, I want to go 10. I'm a 10, I want to go half. I'm a half runner, see, can I do it? Yeah.
Okay. For others, why run a marathon? Well, it's kind of linked to this, can I do it? But it's to finish it. That's the big challenge. I want to be a marathoner. And it's interesting, every weekend when you run and you see people running their first marathon, some people, and this is a classic, we saw it yesterday, Sunday this week, two first-time marathoners. One of the first things he said was, you know, I'm hoping to go sub whatever. He had a time.
Yep.
We were running with him for a while. And he just missed it. And then somebody else who finished about an hour later than that, the time didn't even, you know.
No, he was very emotional
Before, during and after, no mention of the time, other than I saw one comment where he said, oh, you know, I wasn't fast, but I finished. And that was all that he was interested in. So no right or wrong, people have different reasons to go for it. Another one?
Fitness. It's a goal that keeps your fitness on track, your training, your physical fitness on track. So the marathon will do that.
Now, speed is a big one for lots of people.
Yes.
I do hear it as more from men. It's like, you know, it's the classic scenario of, you know, they're in the bar and, you know, oh, my mate ran a marathon here and he ran it in, you know, 4 hours and 5 minutes. Well, you know, I'm better than him, so I'm going to go out and run it in 4 hours and 4 minutes or better, or whatever the times might be.
Mm.
You know. And so going fast for a lot of people, it is, you know, I want to run a marathon, but I want to run it in a certain
time.
Pace. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep, definitely.
And, of course, to do that for your first is counter to the general advice, which is for your first one, let the body adapt, get there and just run to finish it.
Yeah, see what your natural.
You can go fast later on.
Mm.
But a lot of people still go out thinking that, you know, the time goal is the all-important thing for their first marathon. Another reason to run a marathon, becoming increasingly popular.
Your fundraising. There are so many wonderful causes out there that need money. There are charities that are looking for research. And a lot of people become very passionately involved in fundraising for a particular charity, and it can be a great motivator to take up the challenge of a marathon.
Yes, we do, and we are seeing, you know, more people that are doing their first marathon as part of a fundraising activity. For fun, and sometimes this is, you know, fun with other people. Sometimes it's fun because it's a work thing, or it's a charity fundraising thing, or it might be that you want to go and travel, and the fun aspect is the travel component of your first marathon. You know, I want to go to the Australian Outback. Is a popular first time marathoners location because of the destination. Some of the big city races are, again, you know, I want to travel to a certain country or city, so for fun.
Yep, definitely.
It's probably more of a reason to keep doing it, and not so much for the first one, but for some people it is.
Yep, and closely allied to that is the next reason you might run is that your friends are doing it. Your friends are training, your friends are running, and you're going to participate in a group as you both train, or maybe train for your marathon, so you've got some friends that you train with, but even maybe on the day that you're actually going to have a group challenge or group running together during the event.
Focus. Again, this is one that I think often applies to people who have become runners and they enjoy that time alone or time to think, or to think, you know, sometimes they think with the people they're running with. It's not always an alone thing, but it just gives them like a serenity, peace. You know, so people talk about it, you know, running's like their meditation, so to speak. It's their time alone or their time away from the busy, hectic things. And for those people that become runners, got that benefit out of it, and it's like, well, I want some more of this. And so the marathon distance enhances their focus and their time together.
Yep,
and probably this last one is a little bit similar in that for reason to run your first marathon, it's for people who are already runners, and the marathon is going a bit further, and it's based around this notion of
fellowship.
Yeah,
and like might be your run group that some of them are running the marathon, and you're a 10K runner, or you'd like to join them, you'd like to be a part of this group. They're not actually your friends, but they're people that you train with or that you associate with, and then that then starts to extend. You might have a friend that lives in another city or state, or an acquaintance that you're going to catch up with when you do run your marathon.
And so I think it kind of almost takes us back to the start. This the challenge of, you know, can I do it, and what will I learn? What will I gain from the whole experience? So it's finding out about yourself in some ways. It's sort of like a personal development challenge type activity. Often people who take on the new challenges, they find that it's a great way to learn outside of their existing comfort zone, and they sort of learn that lesson one way or another. Sometimes they decide to run a marathon for any number of reasons, and they then discover that it takes them out of their comfort zone. It's a great way of learning, and then they take on more and more challenges. So there's a few reasons to run your first marathon. You told us that you ran your first marathon because of the challenge to see if you can do it. Then you had a big gap of some 15, 20 years?
Yeah.
Something like that?
Yes.
Then you came back and ran your second first marathon.
Yes. My first successfully completed marathon.
It was almost like two different...
Yeah, two different approaches,
two different mindsets.
Yeah.
So why did you run your second first marathon?
Running my second first marathon, kind of because I love to participate and I wanted to be a part of the experience. So I don't know under what of those goals, for fun, maybe to get out there and have some fun. And, of course, you were running. So it was the friendship aspect of sharing the experience of being a part of this magnificent event, with no expectation that I could finish, as opposed to the other one that I had great expectations I should finish or could finish.
There was some challenge. There was some, can I complete that? You know, can I do it like from the first time, but with a different perspective?
Yeah, with a very different perspective. Lack of self-belief in the second one.
Okay. So for me, I suppose, why did I run my first? It was probably a combination of two things. It was motivated, first of all, by, you know, I'd been very ill and very unfit with chronic fatigue syndrome and couldn't run to the end of the driveway. And so I had set this goal of, well, if I could run a marathon, then I will have got my health back and I'll be fit. So fitness was a big aspect of it, but it was then closely linked with, can I actually do it? So it was a little bit of that challenge, but from a slightly different perspective. So when you were talking about, you know, as a great 10K runner with great genetics, family background in running, all that sort of stuff, it was, you know, the challenge of, can I do it at a certain level, etc. For me, it was coming off not being, you know, other than for football, not being a road runner per se, and coming from a poor health status. So that aspect of fitness and can I take on the challenge were, again, key ones. I mean, it's interesting that, you know, the bucket list notion that some people use for their first marathon is not something which...
No, it didn't apply to both of us.
No, and I think that's a bit more of a newer phenomenon. More people maybe talking about bucket list type activities. It's probably not a sustainable reason as we now move into to why run a few marathons or why make it a marathon in your lifestyle. The bucket list aspect doesn't apply, although when we talk about running a few marathons, there are those people who may have done one or two and then they have a marathon bucket list. So it kind of
does come back into play, but in a different way.
Yes.
Yep.
You know, it's on my list to do the New York Marathon or the Bali Marathon or whatever it might be. So this notion of why run a few marathons, some of the reasons that we run a marathon, I mean, probably they all apply at one level, but there are a couple that take on more prominence.
Yep.
And I suspect that my example, why did I run my second marathon? My first marathon was 4 hours and 1 minute. So I had this sense of unfinished business. I always wonder if I'd run 3 hours and 59 or 58, would I have said, oh, well, I went under 4 hours, you know, I'm not going to go under 3 hours, so one's enough. So going faster became a big motivator for me in my next few marathons. It was just, okay, I know I can make it, now I want to do a bit more. What do you think of a couple of the other reasons that people run a few marathons?
I think the fitness aspect is important for a lot of people because it does give them an aim of their training so that they can start to build up, oh, I've got my physical fitness training sorted out for the next 12, 16 weeks because I'm building up to this next marathon. So it gives them a direction with what activities they're doing. So it's short run day, it's long run day, it's, you know, they like to know what they're doing. And it does give you a reason to run.
Yep.
That's important for a lot of people. But I think then people start to look for maybe another reason. And the fundraising that we've mentioned becomes a great one of keeping you on track. And I run for myself, I run a marathon, but now I want to run for other people.
Yep.
And fundraising is a great way of putting your focus onto others, not just yourself.
So that could be like, you know, I run once a year to raise money in a certain race because it's close to home. Or it could be, you know, I'm going to run one a month for this year for a cause, or I'm going to run X number. So the fundraising can take on, you know, multiple marathons is in the few, or it can be, you know, on a regular basis kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think the focus one is also another thing, and this is more the one that applies, I think, to the annual. You know, surprised by the number of people who we meet who run their hometown marathon every year. They only run one marathon a year, but, you know, I've run 15 Melbourne marathons over the last 16 years. I missed one because, you know, we were having a baby that weekend, or I boss sent me international, whatever it was, but they run, if all things being equal, they run the annual thing, and it helps them with their focus. It does help with their fitness, but it's basically, it's, they love to run, and it gives them, you know, if I can stay marathon fit once a year, then I'm in reasonable shape.
Yep.
So that's why we sort of run a few, and I think for people there, the fast thing is the category. It's like, well, okay, I got down to my goal, and now I'm off to other things. You know, maybe I'm off to
Ironman.
Play tennis or sport or other parts.
Yep.
You know, family life takes on, you know, career, education, whatever it might be. And then we have those people who move beyond just running a few, and they pretty much adopt the marathon as a key part of their lifestyle.
Yeah.
And that they're running probably, regularly every year. So it might be 3 a year, but it could be 10 a year. It could be one a month. It could be, there are people who run 20 or 30 a year. But it's like they're always training for the next marathon. They always know when the next marathon is. And that doesn't mean they might not have 2 months off a year or 3 months off a year over Christmas to do something else. They might, you know, play a bit of cricket or something. But they are then always keeping an eye on the next marathon. So running is an important part of they run pretty much year round, and they're always building up.
Yeah.
So this is a bit of a shift. For some of those people, there is a fast phase, but after 5 to 10 years, then sometimes that starts to no longer be the prime motivator. They don't want to get slower, or they don't want to do that, but it's not necessarily all about speed. It's all about this helps me with other parts of my life. So fitness, yeah, I think, becomes a very important aspect.
Fitness does become important, and I've got to keep fit for my next race. And whether that's 3 weeks away, 2 weeks away even, they try and just maintain this level of fitness that they're good to go, whatever the event, whatever the marathon is coming up.
The next two, I think, are connected, and that is fun and friendship. Often people who run a lot, it's the specific enjoyment they get, the travel, the planning, the looking at the different races. You know, some people get hooked into, you know, I want to be in the 50 marathon club. You know, I want to run every state in America, or I want to run, what's it called, the Southern Cross, if you do all the states in Australia and North and South Island. So they take on these little challenges, and it's fun. That's what they plan their holidays around. They're doing it with often their friends, or if they're not training with their friends, they're social networking with their friends, and they're catching up with their friends at the races. They might travel together. So it's a very important aspect.
Mm. And I suppose allied to that closely is the fellowship that comes from participating in frequent marathons. You see the familiar faces as you go from race to race around,
yep,
Australia, and sometimes even the world. You start to see some of the same people, and you know, you don't even maybe socialise with them, but you catch up with them and communicate with them regularly.
Yeah, and I think one of the ways I like to distinguish between the friendship and the fellowship is that the friends are, you know, they're friends. They're people that I know by first name. I might have dinner with them at the events, or at least have a chat and catch up, and I'm kind of know them at that next level. But the fellowship is kind of that broader sense of giving back and contributing. So it might be that, you know, they get a real buzz out of running along. Well, I mean, we did it on the weekend again. We're running along. Some guy comes up. Oh, you know, you couple on the run. Yeah, I'm doing my first marathon. And it's like, oh, I talked to him. And he says, you know, how do you recover and what are you doing? He had a few questions. And you get this kind of enjoyment out of giving back, contributing, encouraging, helping people that you don't. They're not friends.
No.
They might become friends, but you've never met them before. You might see them occasionally, but it's like you're contributing to and part of the running community, doing your bit. So I think fellowship's important. And there are some people, our mate, Jason Nelson, is one who fits into this category, that he's been running marathons for years and years and years, and I'll never forget that time that we interviewed him, and he has a different challenge every year to run as part of his running to fundraise for people. So ongoing marathoning and running, for him, part of the motivation is fundraising. He just does it year in, year out. That's quite unique and quite special, but that's another reason why people go on and run as a marathoning lifestyle rather than just the odd one.
Yep, definitely.
All right, well, that's a bit of a take on why run a marathon, why run your first, why run a few, or why make it a regular event. Anything else to add before we move along?
Just I suppose that it can be an addictive lifestyle. I think a lot of people that get into the marathon running lifestyle find that it does not overwhelm their lives, but they feel if they get injured or they can't participate, that it is something that they really notice and they feel very upset about.
Yes, it would be interesting to do a show or a segment at some point on the negative aspects of that. And I think it's becoming a bit of an the undiscussable in some ways, that the addiction, there is a running addiction, and specifically I think there is a marathon running addiction. It's this classic thing of, you know, well, people have a negative impact on the rest of their life via their running, and it could be like gambling, in that they're spending all their money travelling all around the world, and they, you know, money that they can't spend, they're hooked up on credit cards. For other people, it's sort of like, you know, they just it's an attention thing, or it's a running away from something else. So there is a dark side, I think, to when an addiction becomes a negative. But for many of the people who do run a lot, it's all of those positives. And I think that's the first test, is are you looking at a couple of these reasons and saying, yes, well, I'm doing it for fitness, I'm doing it for friendship, I'm having a lot of fun, and I'm doing some fundraising, and here's all the positives that it gives to the rest of my life. My energy's up, so it's helping with my career. I'm doing it, you know, with friends and family, so I've got more time, more energy. I'm a better dad, better husband, whatever it might be. You know, you can be very clear. Are you getting all of these and positives out? And if you're not, then, you know, like any addiction to drinking, gambling, smoking, whatever else, then you probably need to get some help and go cold turkey.
There you go. But in the most part, we love our running, and 99.99% of people are in a happy place.
Yes, it's a question I ask often, not often, but I think about every now and then, is like, is the way we do it, you know, for all the right reasons, and is it healthy, and is it contributing to our life? Is it not a negative kind of thing? Because you do like to get out the events and see people, and so it is an interesting thing to be mindful with anything of that ilk. Okay, on that note, let's move along with the show.
You're listening to the Partner Running Show with your hosts, Couple on the Run, Sue and Andrew O'Brien. Proudly brought to you by PartnerRunning.com and the Partner Runner magazine. The road ahead. Join us as we take a quick peek at a few of next weekend's running events.
Well, in the Northern Hemisphere, we are still in the middle of summer. We've just passed the summer solstice, so there's still a few midnight events going on. But just some of the events that are on are the Aspen Backcountry Marathon, Bastard in Sweden. I had to be very careful how I said that.
What did you call me?
Brixen Dolomiten in Italy. The Giant's Head in the UK, Lapland Ultra, we can guess where that is, Bad Marsh Night Ultra in the USA, the Night Marathon in Novi Sad in Serbia, the Paavo Nurmi Marathon in Finland, Pacific Crest Trail in the USA, Rovaniemi in Lapland, so there's a lot up in that part of the world, Run for Troops in the USA, Run Charlevoix in the USA, Safaricom in Kenya, Waterford in Ireland, Waterford Biking, sorry, the Bay of Fundy in the USA, the Graubünden in Switzerland, Kona Marathon in Hawaii, that'd be a nice one, Mont Blanc in Switzerland, or the French-Swiss border, Tanamanga in Mexico, Dia de la Padera in Argentine, Mount Kilimanjaro Marathon in Tanzania, the North Sea Beach Marathon in Denmark, Pichirichi in South Australia, Run West Wales in the UK, Victoria Falls Marathon in Zimbabwe, Wakefield in the UK, and I've saved it to last to talk about the Surf Coast Trail Marathon down in Torquay, and we'll be heading down to run that on the weekend on Saturday. But we are also turning around and then running back,
which is a good way to complete a long run as part of our training for the Yu Yangs 100 miler, which is coming up in middle of July. And of course, the Yu Yangs has I'll probably get this wrong, I think a 15, a 30, a 50, an 80, and 100 miler. I'm not 100% sure on the 15, but I'm positive about the 30, the 50, the 80 and 100 miler. Maybe it's a 10, not a 15, but there is a event for somebody, for the whole family there.
Yes, and, definitely.
It's a wonderful event, which you can still enter across at trailsplus.com.au. Dad, did you say Safaricom?
Yes, I did.
Economy of Comic-Con or a sort of convention type thing. So always people dress up as safari in safari suits to run Safaricom or rangers or animals or what's the story?
Yes, I don't know. I have to investigate that one and find out. But some interesting running this weekend wherever you are in the world of events. I hope you have clear skies, no wind. What are the other things we like? Clear skies, no wind, and temperate temperatures.
It reminded me of the Bryce Canyon Ultra, which was on, not last week, the week before, I think. And I saw a post go past on the people who organised that their thing and saying something about everybody who entered the Bryce Canyon this year would qualify for a job with the American Postal Service because in sleet and snow and hail and rain and wind and whatever else, they still got the job done. They had not the best of conditions this year, which is
a reminder to us all.
Glad that they got that out of the way so that when we get there in the next year or two, the conditions will be good because they've had their poor conditions. Okay, well, thank you very much for tuning in to the Partner Running Show. Have a great week of running. Thank you very much to our special listener who sent in that question. Thank you, Sue, for doing a wonderful job there with your Ask Sue, talking about your Uncle Ron. Best of wishes and all our thoughts and condolences to not just Sue, but more importantly to Ron's close family and friends. And we'll see you next week on the Partner Running Show. Thanks for tuning in and have a great week of running wherever you are running. You're listening to the Partner Running Show with your hosts, Couple on the Run, Sue and Andrew O'Brien. Proudly brought to you by PartnerRunning.com and the Partner Runner magazine.